So, hello and welcome to this special edition of the ASI cast. Now, over the next few months, alongside our regularly scheduled episodes, we're publishing a special series which is called Measurement in 2030. It's going to be a series of three panels that will serve as our build-up to our annual conference in Copenhagen later this year. For each of these special episodes, we're gathering together a group of measurement industry experts to help us envisage what measurement is going to look like in 2030, which is now halfway through the decade, just 5 years away. In later discussions, we're going to be looking at the skills the industry is going to need and how measurement suppliers and currency jigs will need to adapt and change the way they organize and do measurement. But in this first panel, we're going to be focusing on the hot topic of auditing. And it definitely is a hot topic because it recurred throughout our conference in Venice last November. Measurement systems are becoming more and more complex, expanding out from meter panels and survey research to become hybrid systems, combining a multitude of data sources and also using advanced modeling techniques. So, with measurement data accounting for billions of dollars of ad revenue, content investment, and subscription revenue, how can we make sure that these new systems are transparent and accountable? So today, with my guests, we're going to be discussing five specific challenges. How can auditing and the need for transparency cope with that complexity of modern measurement? Can there be a standard framework that we can actually audit against in the first place? What are the new skills that are needed to conduct these complex audits? What happens when audits and transparency meet intellectual property? What happens when they meet privacy legislation? And who's qualified to conduct these new types of audit in the first place? And of course, all of this is playing out against the background of European legislation like the European Media Freedom Act and new cross-media initiatives like Origin in the UK and Aquila in the US. Just as a note, for the purposes of this discussion, don't worry, we're not going to be doing a deep dive into the specifics of each medium, video, audio, outdoor publishing, etc. But we're really going to be focused on the common challenge all the currencies face as their measurement systems become ever more complex and people want to understand how they work. So hopefully that sets the scene. But before we jump in, let's meet our panel. I'm just going to ask them to briefly introduce themselves. So, John, do you want to go first?
Thank you, Richard. Good morning, good evening, wherever you are. 35 years in the industry, most of them at Kantar, most of them in the operations area. More recently, I've been involved in setting up audit frameworks for various parties around the globe, and my interest is in the audits and the operations side. I am not a researcher. I come from an operations background, so trying to make it happen as well as how to make sure that it's valid.
Cool. Valerie.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie Morrison. I'm the managing director of CESP. CESP is the French auditor. So we audit all currency media measurement studies in France, and we also work abroad. We've worked in 25 markets so far.
Oh, Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris Mundy. I'm chief exec of RSMB. We develop methodologies. We're also an auditing firm. One of our responsibilities is to provide assurance within the BARB television audience measurement contract, for example. I am an audience researcher. I started off on the broadcaster side and I've moved to the agency side over the last 5 years or so.
Brilliant, Leslie.
I'm Leslie Wood, and I guess my whole career has been creating new ways of doing measurement in the full media space. I was the chief research officer at NCS, Nielsen Catalina, and built their ad response models, and most recently at iSpot, building audience a currency audience there. So I'm actually a builder of these advanced data, big data, data science, AI kinds of research tools.
Right, Lucia.
My name is Lucia Antal. I will start from the bottom up. I'm the head of research and development in the leading TV station in Romania, and not only TV station, we have also a streaming platform in our group. which is part of the CME Central Media Enterprise Group in Europe, which is having a lot of video, this TV streaming business in six countries along Europe. I'm also president of the Romanian Association for Measuring the Video Audience in Romania. I'm part of the board of IGIC. I'm also a member in the board of newly formed Audience Measurement Coalition. So a lot of hats.
And finally, Brenda.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brenda Wortley with 3M3A. My personal background is from the agency perspective initially, and then at a broadcaster side, developing and setting up return path systems, internal systems. So yes, not a researcher, but embedded in research my whole life, and a very heavy user of the data. So yeah, we audit cross media, different markets across the across different parts of the globe, and I think understand the practicalities of theory and then what goes on in reality and in a lot of third world countries. So I would say a pragmatic auditor.
Yeah,
I can confirm. I think one of the last audits done by Brenda, it's in Romania for our system.
There you go. It's almost as if we planned it. But, just to stress, as people will have picked up, this is very much going to be looking at things on an international basis because we're covering off variously France, the US, Romania, South Africa, UK, etc. But where I wanted to start, and that first challenge I mentioned in my introduction, is really about this new complexity that we're looking at in terms of actually wanting to understand systems. And I know it's something that John spoke about at our event in Venice, so this will be a good jump off point. If John, do you want to just try and summarize for us what you think the actual challenges are in terms of what makes up a measurement system now, that we've moved beyond? I don't want to use the word simple panels, because panels were never simple, but nonetheless it has got a lot more complicated, John.
Yeah, I think that's the way to sort of try and phrase it, in a sense that the whole complexity of a cross-media panel, and certainly going forward, is way ahead of the alleged complexity in a single platform service. In my head, I've got it a number of categories. The big category is what I sort of call the methodological technical aspects of a cross-media measurement service, and that's the, if you like, the issues addressed by having different data sets, largely how you take big data sets and small data sets and connect them in a valid way, or user-centric data with device-centric data. I'd include in that sort of methodological stroke research area walled gardens. How does an auditor, the challenge for an auditor is, do you have access to raw data if it's in a walled garden? I'd include in that vendor transparency. That's to say, different vendors, and I know we'll talk about it, have proprietary algorithms which they purport to represent certain data in certain ways. So how does an auditor try and assess something which is proprietary, and therefore it presents a challenge to somebody coming in and looking at that data? Deduplication and those sorts of things fall into this large methodological area, which is, I think, the area that most people think about when they think about the challenges of a cross-media service. More subtly still, a lot of these services now cross national boundaries. So it's not the case that you have a service that is just based in one country. You can have teams of relevant expertise all across the globe. And much as I'd like, as an auditor for Pure Cross Media, to travel across the globe doing audits, it's a challenge to think, how are we going to do that? There are standards being developed about remote auditing, Lord help us, and they may help us, I don't know. And the reason that that there are now sort of cross-national teams involved in auditing is because of the technological changes that have come along. We now have cloud technology, we have AI coming down at us along the tracks. And with this sort of global technology being deployed, I think the challenge for audits there is what sort of skill sets do you need in order to be able to address those technical challenges to do with data integration, what tools are being used in the industry, et cetera, not helped by the fact that there is no agreement on metrics across the different data sets. So you've got a layered methodological issues to do with the actual approach taken and the data sets themselves, the technology that's being deployed, which leads to a globalization of the services, all of which, for an audit perspective, pose individual challenges. The second big area in my mind is the area of privacy and regulation. A whole new layer of regulation and evolving regulation around consent, around user anonymization is something which should be within the scope of an audit. You can't really have a panel in which all the methodological side things work properly, but there is an open door on the personal data. And I speak personally, I'm in the middle of an audit at the moment where personal data is not being made available for the audit. So how does an audit ensure that re-identification of a system isn't possible? What about things like double blind between data providers? How do you ensure that a double blind is A, working correctly and validating that that's true, and also making sure that you can't re-identify on either side of the double blind process? So the privacy and regulation, which is different across the globe, there's the GDPR, there's various regulations in the States, Brazil, even China has a different regulatory framework which applies to which would apply to cross-media services. I'd also add in there standardization. I know we're going to talk about the MRC standards, Richard, in a bit, but actually there's standardization. There are standards across all the elements of a service. So it's not just about research, it's about data processing, it's about compliance with privacy regulations. I've got a list of about 20 different standards which might be applied in an audit, and which any client who was investing in an audit would need to consider as part of the scope. My last bit is the business aspect of it, of auditing. I think I've got a quote here. It says something like, the media business exerts its own influence on auditors. Stakeholders have got an incentive to make their metrics look good. And I think one of the challenges for audits is, amidst all of the other stuff that's going on, auditors need to remain neutral, and they need to try and keep a neutral view of things. And actually, that argues in favor of having more frequent audits, because if there are changes in algorithms, there are changes in linkage mechanisms, an audit is, never mind how you do it, an audit is important, if you like, in establishing that that is a valid methodology. So I think staying above commercial pressures in the audit industry going forward, with more new players coming in, with different currencies being proposed, I think is an important thing. So there's the methodology part, there's the data privacy and regulations part, and there's the business commercial aspects of the audit that I think are the three categories in my mind.
Yeah, that's a really great way of setting the scene. Thanks, John. I think I'd probably add one more thing to that. And I think you were hinting at it a bit in your final comment, which is understanding what the motivation is for the audit in the first place. I mean, there can be an audit that is asking quite literally, is this company doing what they're saying they are doing? And then there can be potentially an audit that's saying, is this company doing the right thing? As in, is the methodology they're using the best? And I think sometimes there can be a confusion between those two, or as you say, rather than a regular audit, the number two commercial channel in the company, in the country, doesn't believe they're the number two channel, so they want an audit to prove that the system is misrepresenting them. So you can have issues around the motivation for that in the first place. I mean, Leslie, in the US, you've had that it much more standardized with the MRC being in place since, was it the 60s that the Congress
68,
brought in?
I think it was 68, but I'm not, it's in the 60s, yeah, that it was set up. I would add to your list though, because the US JIC, which is very different from the JICs in the rest of the world, but we call it a JIC, they've been looking at, are the numbers usable? Like, do they in the alternate currencies, the new evolving currencies, are they are do the numbers make any sense? You know, are they numbers you can use? So there's not only it's not that they need to be magnitude, they're not so much looking at magnitude, but consistency and the demographic complexities. And are you getting the levels that you would expect from streaming or by different publishers, et cetera? So they're looking at, they have, I think, 700 tests they do on each data set that's provided by each currency. So there's the three different parts. It's not just, and the MRC, when they audit, they are a process audit. They actually do not audit your methodology. So when they actually do not, George Ivy regularly says, we do a process audit. We are not, now they publish standards, but their audit isn't designed to connect those standards to what's being audited. And you know, that can create great difficulties because there's a misconception there. There's a divide.
That was always one of the issues I had with some of the ISO standards, is that you could be an absolutely rubbish company, but if you documented how rubbish you were, you would pass. Even
That's
if,
right.
even if, whereas you could have very happy customers, bad documentation, and fail. But Brenda, I can see you're keen to
I
contribute.
just wanted to add one other thing. You know, John, you spoke about, you're talking about cross media and cross country and cross, but actually within each media, there's many, many data sets that go into, can go into a single measurement. So the complexity isn't just across things. There's deep complexity within each, can be within each media. Because you know, there's all different sources, and you how you put them together is data science.
Yeah, I took that as out of scope though, which I was go back cross media, so I was cautious about that. But yes, you're quite right.
Brenda?
I think some of the challenges that John raised have perhaps been with us for a while. And they the base, the challenges of auditing really. But I think your question around what has arisen from the complexity of new systems, I think the one, the one of the big challenges that we've encountered is your new big machine learning systems. They're not designed for reporting, they're designed for queries. And whilst you can get a theoretical understanding of the thinking that's going in, it's very hard to say 90% are within this tolerance. You cannot do those sort of things when you effectively are running queries on a database. These auditing is moving more into sensibility checks, multiple queries, multiple ad hoc checks, and do they make sense? Is at the moment one of the few ways that these big machine learning systems can be audited. I don't know if anyone else has figured out how to audit them.
So, Leslie, sorry, don't.
So the one in the US, we are required to provide the rating for everything, every single spot. you know, like we're and groups of spots and combinations and reach across the, and like we're given a very, very long list of what we have to provide so that it's not on the auditor's side, the JIC side, to have to go and pull each piece of that data. It's like create however you want to do it, you need to have and know that when I ask for that rating today and tomorrow, it'll be the same rating.
Lucia?
I think we are living very interesting times. So auditing w used to mean verifying the panel setup, verifying the sampling methods. Now it means validating passive data collection, hybrid models, algorithms transparency, data fusion process. So all of this, it's not only about what data was collected, but also how it is stitched together. And this means different skill sets which are needed inside the auditor's team, let's say, and also different ethical responsibility in this case, because it's not only about what data, but how it is stitched together. And this is also, from my point of view, a tension between the need of speed and innovation, which is right now in our industry, and on the other hand, what I saw also in our cases is the slower, very careful process that an audit requires. Yeah. So I think the traditional checkbox approach of auditing with checking, it no longer works. In neither in Romania, neither wherever will be. But and also, I think the audit should be not only a tool for improvement, should be a tool for improvement, not only compliance, because in case of Romania, all the time is about compliance, but I think it should be also a tool for improvement.
Chris.
I think it's worth saying as well, we're going through a period of change at the moment. I think we are evolving from a traditional view of what audit was to something that will change over time. And certainly in Europe, with the European Media Freedom Act, that is going to mandate certain things in terms of transparency of methodology and so on, that will probably level the playing field a little bit in terms of what information's available. Ideally, we'll see. But we'll also probably start leading to some standards for the new world. And you know, the MRC, I think, is also kind of moving in that direction. So it does feel to me like we're in a position of kind of flux, and things will become clearer as time goes on. I think my other point is on audits, and I'm not sure we've quite touched on this, is who commissions the audit. You know, it's one thing a broadcaster saying, I'm not happy with my ratings, I'd like to audit the currency, whatever it might be. But, you know, who commissions the audit affects the scope of the audit. It affects whether it's an audit of a whole process or part of a process. It has an opportunity to be positioned transparently or perhaps not quite as transparently as it might be. And I think there's a little bit of a caveat emptor with audits. I mean, an audit you would always think is a good thing, but I'm not sure it's always as transparent as it could be. And I think as time goes on, and there are many, you know, we've been in a world with a very small number of currencies, really, and now we have multiple currencies of one sort of another, and people are trading off some of them, people aren't trading off others, but they're being used to inform decision making. It's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how we validate this disparate group of things. And as I think Lucia said, the checkbox world is gone now. So you can never make like the like comparisons again, I think.
John, I think you're circling back to you.
Okay, I'm just going to reinforce what something that Chris was just talking about. I went on about it at the Venice conference. I do think that the people commissioning audits need to be awfully careful and thorough about their scoping and what it is that they want to do, because that gives you, as an auditor, A clue as to what their motives are, and B, a clue as to exactly what it is that you want to do. A full audit of a complete cross-media service is a very big undertaking, and it's not just a question of one person saying, "Oh, I'd like to have an audit," because it's I'll shut up now because scoping is my big thing.
But not even just a, as Leslie was saying, it's not even just a cross media service. Even single media are more and more incorporating panel data, big data, algorithms, reach and frequency models, all of those things that contribute towards what's going on. But Chris mentioned standards and the European Media Freedom Act, which we'll come on to the latter a bit in a moment. But I know Valerie and I had a chat probably 5, 6 years ago about the fact that if you go back 15, 20 years, we had something called GGTAM, the Global Guidelines for TV Audience Measurement. So someone doing an audit at least had some sort of vague rule book as to what a meter panel should be like, how it should work. Clearly, that's massively out of date, and there's been discussions about could it be updated? But Valerie, do you think it is a realistic objective to have some form of, if we're ticking boxes, is there something we can tick boxes against, or have we moved into a world in which there is no one single way of doing measurement?
Yes, I think it's harder and harder. And I remember this interview we did, and we concluded that we would probably need a JJVM with video audience measurement. But in fact, it's still early days, I think, because as you said, there are different approaches to do that. And that's something, I mean, it was mentioned earlier, there's an increased complexity and different ways of approaching things. So I'm not sure we can, maybe one day we will have JJVAMs, but I think it's still too early to have that. And I think in the meantime, as you said, we need a variety of different skills. And we have some resources still to audit against. I mean, we have some standards. We have ESOMAR guidelines, for example, and we also have best practices. I mean, in terms of data collection, statistics. At CUSP, we are lucky to have a scientific committee with doctors in maths, statistics, IT. And increasingly, we have many different expertise within the scientific committee. So that's one important resource as well. And I think the other resource we can audit against is the benchmark we gradually build with our experience. I mean, we all have experience in many markets. So we accumulate benchmarks on KPIs, which are useful because you still need, even though we don't do box ticking, we still need some guidelines of some reference numbers to audit against, I think. And we have you, someone mentioned the MRC standards. That can be also a reference point, although they are not always followed. If we think of cross media, for example, I mean, in some areas they are quite established, like viewability, I think that's established everywhere. But for cross media, I don't know of any market which has really applied these MRC cross media standards. So that's a topic. And maybe in the future, we need a more jointly formed standards, more global standards, not necessarily just US-led standards. That's my view anyway.
I was going to ask about the MRC standards because at some point it's almost like we suddenly woke up and there they are and everyone's accepting them around the world, but we didn't necessarily have a vote on that as to whether how that would happen. I mean, the MRC was set up to look after US measurement. It wasn't originally a international organization. I know George has been called on more and more to get involved in other markets. Is that something that makes sense, or should there be something that's more global than just?
I mean, we recognize the quality of MRC work and we promote their standards and we have regular calls with George and Ron, and so there's no issue there. But I think, you know, we all face the same challenges, and why should we just have the US input? I think on some topics it's good and it's great that you've organized this panel. We have EMRO, for example, within Europe, gathering 22 countries, and I'm one of the board members. We have our conference soon in June. There's the ASI forum as well. Lucia mentioned IGIC. I think there are many different global forums where we can discuss, and certainly with the US as well. But I think increasingly it's important to have a global joint effort, not just a US-led approach. That's my view anyway.
Lucia?
The MRC is a strong reference, of course, but my opinion is that it is still a very US-centric logic behind it. And this doesn't always translate well in smaller or other type of markets as the ones in Europe. So it's not the fact that they are not doing a good job, but what is, at least what is happening right now and is bothering me a little bit, is that each country is essentially creating its own audit criteria right now, because we don't have, let's say, aligned principles. So from my point of view, we need a minimum set of global principles for auditing, but local markets can adopt, not just copy-paste, but reflecting the local audience behavior and the market maturity. So it is good to that MRC is already having these things, but I think we should think also the level of Europe, what we are doing. On the other hand, it is from my point of view, we have the definition of what is auditable. It's varies right now. What we are auditing, we are auditing the methodology, we are auditing the technology, we are auditing the data, or we are auditing the outcomes. And which is the purpose of the auditing? Is verification or validation? Because from my point of view, from the MRC point is more validation than verification.
Chris, you're involved in the recent announcement about the auditing of Origin. I know you've been helping them work out how to audit what is a very complex cross-media system. I think there's been three different auditors announced. I think one for the panel, one for the vid model, and one for the data modeling. Does that reflect what one of the things we're talking about, that really there's such a wide range of skills needed to do auditing, that you've actually helped Origin go to three different companies to focus on specific aspects of it? What are the new skills that you think are needed to do these sorts of complex audits?
I will answer that question, but I just want to do make one final point on the last question, which is the elephant in the room, and I hope that's a European expression, is because the ad sales market pretty much everywhere is increasingly being driven by Google and Meta, it's inevitable that what happens in the States is driving the other markets in terms of how the MRC leads, in terms of what standards looks like, in terms of how data is shared, whether data is shared at all, whether those people are prepared to play ball or not. And I think that will be a big challenge. And from a European perspective, it'll be really interesting to see how that kind of plays out over time. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, to your point, the world is becoming a lot more complicated. We've actually just done an audit with Brenda, because we both have different kind of strengths in our relative areas. And we partnered on an audit in Mexico on HR media. And I think it is very much the case that different skill sets exist. And I think perhaps John's used the expression about componentizing. Sorry, John, I've probably done something really horrible to the expression you did use, the audit to make sure you've got the right skill sets in the right places. You know, it's not clearly not, as we've said, just about sampling or validating, remating or whatever anymore. You've got to assess the validity of methodologies. You've got to handle a vast amount of data. You've got to try and understand algorithms. So it's a mix of skills. It's traditional research skills. It's data science skills. But importantly, it's also industry know-how. You know, I think in some markets, people might think, oh, you just go to the big four accounting firms. But actually, they're not experts. They're not experts in the output data. And that's incredibly important. I think Valerie was making that point earlier on. And that's why specialists like us, and it's not a sales pitch, I think it's generally true, are kind of really important, because in the absence of being able to lift the lid and really get into algorithms, your starting point almost sometimes is the output data, because that'll give you a sense of whether the system as a whole is working kind of correctly.
That raised an interesting point about the big auditing companies, because we talked about motivations. If one of your motivations is to reassure general users that your system is okay, then it might arguably be good to have Ernst & Young stamped on your thing, say they said it was really good, than actually have someone who knows a lot more about measurement than Ernst & Young, but people haven't necessarily heard of. It's almost like, the equivalent of a kite mark. So, and the challenge, I think, is that those bigger companies are going to get further and further away from being able to understand the complexities of these systems, and will just end up doing the box ticking exercise. But perhaps I'm being unfair.
I think that's probably true. I think it's, they are very good at auditing process and auditing against, ISO or whatever it might be, but they're not necessarily very good at understanding how a capping routine might work, for example. They might say, this is the capping routine specified, this calculation is doing that, but they're not necessarily going to be great at the helicopter view of, is it doing the right thing in the first place?
John? John's got his hand up, but he's got his mute button on. There he is.
Okay, now I have to declare an interest here because I am involved with Pure Cross Media in one of the three audits on that are taking place on Origin. But I think it's quite interesting that I am a great proponent for breaking up the scope of an audit into component parts and trying to get the best skill set for each one of those component parts. The challenge is to whether is breaking up and viewing your project in a reasonable way. And it's sort of interesting to think, to conject on if 12 months, 18 months down the line, Origin decide to do another audit, whether they actually draw the same lines as to how they've constructed this audit, because we and they are all learning, I think, as we go in this area. So yeah, I think that trying to make the best of available skill sets is important. And that helicopter view piece is a really vital component as we go forward, in my view.
Is there, I think we buy into the idea of the need to compartmentalize, but presumably one of the downsides to that is that there has to be some element where someone is checking that all the bits fit together. That you could actually have an audit where all three bits are fine, but they don't actually add up into something that fits together. There still needs to be that, I hate the phrase helicopter view, that all these elements are fitting together.
Yeah, I
Wouldn't
think.
it be one of the components?
Sorry?
Wouldn't that be one of the components, how they fit together?
Yes, yeah, but how would you describe that overall? That would almost be like an Uber audit that was master audit or something like that. But
In fact, who coordinates? Who coordinates the audit?
My view is that that goes back to the client. I think the client has to decide that. We have to assume the client has some degree of expertise and understanding of what they're doing. So in the end of the day, the buck stops with the client in that context, in my mind.
And one more question. Who decides what good looks like?
But also, I think what good looks like today might be different from what good looks like tomorrow. I mean,
Exactly.
Something like Origin or something less ambitious, something gets built, it evolves, it improves the whole time. And actually, where something starts from, you might have an acceptance that it's maybe a little bit more rough and ready, but it's processing going in the right direction. And it'll become stricter over time and more data will get embedded and it'll be produced more quickly. I think, that there's audits which are about has this process been followed? And there are audits which really are about continuous improvement to a degree and reassuring the market that the best is being done. And just on the helicopter viewpoint, Richard, also the risk is not just that three things don't fit together, but also that there's a fourth thing that isn't being measured at all, perhaps. And Who decides that? I mean, ultimately, I guess the market in the case of something like Origin, because either the market will buy it or not. But it's a really interesting point. Who adjudicates that the whole end-to-end process, including the data that goes in at the start, is actually validated?
Yeah, it's a really good point about we won't veer off into semantics, but the word audit has a specific meaning. But as you were just saying, if we're looking at continuous improvement, perhaps we also need to rebrand some forms of auditing as the equivalent of a performance review. It's actually, if you have a review with a member of staff, you're looking at what they're doing, how they could be improving, where the service is heading, as opposed to audit sounds a very official sort of, box ticking stamp of approval. Leslie, sorry, you were.
All the work I've done is in this evolving, it's always in a space that's constantly evolving. And our audits take 2, 3 years, right? So Comscore had to stop evolving for 3 years to get an audit. That's ridiculous. And the cost is enormous to do an audit here, unbelievable in relationship to in relationship to having the cost of media, is going down per spot. The revenue, I just don't, it's hard to imagine that you can afford to do the level of audits, but you need to do them more often. And how do you do that deep a dive and keep up? I mean, I think it's a quandary that's almost impossible to imagine how to wrap it all up. But it's definitely a big issue. That flux with the complexity, with the, yeah, very complex.
I mean, certainly, having been a measurement practitioner in a former life myself, the cost of getting a US audit was a pretty effective barrier to entry to anyone other than
Yeah.
Nielsen and Arbitron, really.
That's right.
Valerie, sorry.
Yes, I just wanted to build on two things. One, that Lucia said, what good looks like, who defines what good looks like. For me, it's important to take into account the industry expectations, the local industry expectation, what are their requirements in terms of trading or media planning, etc. So of course, we have the standards, we have the statistical theory, etc., but it's also important to make sure that the measurement is aligned with the market expectations. So for me, what good looks like should also take into account and reflect the industry needs. And the other thing I wanted to say was on improvements, which were mentioned that increasingly audits are about how to improve the system given the complexity. And what we do is we define two types of improvements. We have the required improvements. By this, we mean things that need to be changed because they impact the results, the audience results directly. And then there is another type of improvement, which is more like a suggested adjustments, if you want. It's a small improvement, but not so impactful in terms of the audience results. So I think there's a graduation because you can have many, many, many improvements in an audit, especially given the increased scope of audits. So I think we need to have some priority systems in the improvements.
I mean, there's an implicit element to all that we've talked about, which is that you are going to get the visibility on how things work in the first place. And if a couple of you have mentioned intellectual property already, and Leslie, I know you were at iSpot in a very competitive alt currency marketplace. To what degree is it possible for someone who is selling a competitive product with what they see as their secret sauce that gives them a competitive advantage to open that up to audit, particularly if the people able to do those audits may well be potential competitors? And I know this has been an issue, certainly with some aspects of auditing in the last couple of years, is that those qualified to do the auditing are also potentially going to end up at a competitive company.
Well, actually not in the US because the audits are done by Ernst & Young predominantly. So Out in the US, it's not your competitors, right? Although they do sit on committees that look at the results that come from, right? But they're auditing a process. But the intellectual property whole issue is very interesting because when I started decades ago, people shared what they did and you learned from each other and it helped evolve better products, right? And there wasn't this. And then we went through a period in the 2000s where, oh, intellectual property and patents were really critical and companies needed to connect them up. And it was, lots of things were being protected and you didn't want anybody to know what you did. But I think that, and out of that, Nielsen has NDAs with every contract says you cannot share what we do. You cannot share any numbers. In fact, they even attempted to have that be the researcher at the company can be sued. So each researcher needed to sign an NDA, not just a corporate NDA. So this whole idea that you couldn't actually compare results, you can't look deeply, you can't share what you know, kind of too strict. At iSpot, I built a system that was different than anybody else. The foundation was dramatically different than anything that had been done. And I felt that needed to be shared as the framework. So what we shared was the use case that drove it, the key pieces that we felt had to be in place to meet those use cases, and the general framework for what we were doing, where we were modeling, and the data sources we were using. We shared the variables that we were using in those models because I think that's incredibly important. If you're not using age or you're not using income or you're not, if there's a piece you're not using, people should know that. What are the key pieces? What are the key things that you're putting together? But that was novel. Everybody reported, oh my God, you're sharing so much. Are you afraid? And I was like, not really, because the machine learning that's being used and the models themselves, everybody's got similar data sets. It's how we're using them that's the actual quality of the models. Now, will somebody copy the framework? Sure. But I think that's going to happen just because of the churn in the industry. There's a lot of, used to be we're in the same company for 30 years. There's a lot of churn. And so, people that were do building it, a Josh Chasen or myself, or tomorrow we're in a different company, or we're not, or we're consulting, or we're, that actually, while I wouldn't share the IP that makes iSpot unique, I think the expertise of being able to look at what other people are doing is still there, right? Like it's so I think that we've gone too far on the privacy, and yet, yeah, it's a complex place to be thinking
Brenda, you've been patiently waiting with your hand up.
about. Yeah, I think, and Leslie, thank you for raising the IP point that you have. I think some of the vendors in the market maybe give themselves too much credit that they have unique IP, but in reality, they all have data processing rules and edit rules and whether it's a 5 hour for long viewing or 10 hour, it's there's rules and there's editing in place. And if vendors think that that's their IP, I think they've got it wrong. It's not, okay? And I think what Leslie's alluding to is vendors are sort of trying to close in on some of those things, which I don't know whether it's as a position as an auditor, but when you look across services, it's remarkable how similar things are across different suppliers. There's nothing particularly unique the way Nielsen does something or Kantar or GfK. There really isn't. So I think honestly, vendors just need to let go of that. It's ridiculous. And I think the what it to me, the lens and the light needs to shine back to the client and the vendor relationship and their contract. That's where things begin and end. So what, number one, is auditable? Who owns the audit results? Who owns the data processing rules? All of that has to now start being embedded, in my view, in the client vendor contracts so that the audit is very clear as to what can be published and what can't. Because or else, we could be at quite big risk with certain vendors of infringements.
Yeah, funnily enough, I was seeing an RFP recently for a measurement contract. They did actually have specific clauses around the winning contract to being open to audit and sort of listing some of those aspects. So we may well be heading in the direction Brenda's hoping. I guess the other challenge, we've talked about companies. The other challenge, of course, is the rights of the consumers themselves, the people whose data is being taken into these systems in terms of privacy issues, in terms of GDPR. And I know particularly companies like Google and Facebook can be criticized because there's elements to which they can be seen as hiding behind privacy law in terms of what you can and can't do with their data. Obviously they've been bitten in the past with things around privacy, so they're very careful around it. But Brenda, to what degree do you think there's a limit to how much we can audit when we're actually dealing with quite sensitive, increasingly census level data, in which there's a real danger that people could actually be identified and targeted if there was some form of pattern recognition saying, oh, now we've worked out who that person is, so we'll now market to them to get them to listen more because they're on this particular panel.
So Richard, yes, it is a risk. And I think maybe just to start with that a critical part of a comprehensive audit is to check first and foremost on the vendor's own policies and data storage. Okay, that's got to be checked, and to confirm that they have limited access to records, who has it, that they have clear routines and access to data procedures in place. For me, there's only so much you can do at a data level. And John spoke about the remote auditing. There's only so much you can do. You have to, as an auditor, to get a sense of a market and the real inner functioning, to be exposed both operationally to the vendor service, but I think importantly in a TAMS situation to a panel. And yes, it does become a risk. There is a lot that can be done in an anonymized way, but at the end of the day, if you end up doing home visits and visiting panelists' homes, you incidentally will pick up on a name of a person and a this and a that. You will. So, I think it's down to the integrity of the auditor to manage that. There are procedures that can be put in place, but for me, I would hate to see the day where we cannot do that level of auditing, because it's really the heartbeat. You get to know how a panel was recruited. You get to understand the relationships, their sense of familiarity with the metering equipment. You get to test the metering equipment. Do panelists know each other? There's so much about the integrity of the panel you pick up from home visits. And even down to the classification, what is a socioeconomic grouping versus another, the type of dwellings versus another. You really get a sense of how the theory of things is applied and works in practicality. And it would just be a huge pity to lose that in auditing.
Isn't that, I mean, you're highlighting a really interesting key point there, because there isn't there a danger that therefore we end up holding sampled panels to a much higher degree of scrutiny because we can, because the panel members have consented. And therefore, it is a classic part of a panel, an audit, to visit a panel member, check that they're doing what they're doing. What's the equivalent when you've suddenly got 50,000 ad server records dumping down into a measurement system? You can't do the same with them. How do you know that data is what it says it is, or a million views on YouTube or whatever? You haven't got that option to go back and say, did you actually watch that? To do a coincidental or something. So, Leslie, you'd.
I actually think that the walled gardens are using privacy as a way to restrict access it to a degree that they probably don't need to do, and audits should be able to go in. It's such a convenient it's just such a convenient flag to hold up. We're doing this for privacy when I don't think it's privacy. I think that's an excuse. I think that the walled gardens just would rather you not know how they count what they count. And so I think it would be ideal if the advertisers actually held their dollars back from things that were not audited. Of course, that's, that ship sailed. But how did, yeah, just I
Yeah,
think.
I think those walled garden data sets as well. There's the fear by the owners that perhaps the data isn't as robust as they would like us to think, and then it works the other way around, that the other people who are part of the service who are using that data have a lack of trust in the data being provided by other people. So it works all the way around to undermine confidence.
Definitely. One of the things that ties some of this together, I know we have people on the call who aren't just from Europe, but I think this has got wider implications, is that the, as we highlighted at the last conference that we had, the European Media Freedom Act has extensive sections now specifically about media measurement, the need for it to be audited, and the need for standards. And I know Lucia is heavily involved in a the response of certainly the European JICs to that. What sort of conversations are you having about the implications of that act, and also what are going to be the implications for auditing companies? Because it does seem at the very least that there's going to be an increased frequency of audits, and also some might argue for some of the sort of the less major media markets, that the cost of frequent auditing is going to be almost a barrier to complying. Lucia, what's your take on all of this?
From this is like this. EMFA may trigger regular audits as part of the compliance, from my point of view, which is a good thing, if it will go also to the walled gardens companies, not only to the normal suppliers of data. The issue will be, at least for countries like Romania, who pays for those audits? Because if they will be imposed and it's cost there and it's frequency there, it's important to understand who will pay for those audits. And on the other hand, we are having also the fact that we should ensure, sorry for my teams, we should ensure that the audits remain independent and also fast and efficient, because otherwise we will go from one audit to another. And what I really think it's happening across different countries, as I was going through some data about Romania right now, and I was thinking about it. It's about the, let's say, the digital usage in Romania is very high, but when it comes to digital literacy, this is at least very low comparing with other countries. And I think this is going also to data usage and data literacy also for all of our markets. So a lot of people are using data, but that necessarily means they have data literacy. And I'm going further right now, and I'm saying all of us and a lot of us from our industries are having audit usage, but not of all of us have the same audit literacy. So I think it's important because this is influencing how the who can do the audit and how these audits can be done. Yeah, because right now it's normally it's one company, but looking to the origins example, or at least in Romania, it was one company which was doing the audit. But right now, looking to the future, for sure we will have a bunch of companies which will do the audits, and this will involve even more costs. Yeah, because it will not be only one company; will be three companies which will do the audits from the different perspective and an ecosystem of specialists. Because just like measurement systems are evolving, also the audits ecosystem should evolve. So, that's it from my part regarding that. There are a lot of questions, at least there are a lot of questions. And who is in a way also the GICS right now are acting somehow as auditors in some markets. So it's also the GICS which are auditors from time to time. Depending also what GICS represents, yeah, because part of the GICS are doing some research themselves, but part of them are just, you know, taking care that the things are clear and are according to the, let's say, the standards of the market.
It's, the more I listen to this conversation, the more I wonder whether I should be investing in an auditing company, because it sounds like they're going to have a lot of work to do over the next few years, in terms of, not least in terms of the European Union telling them that they need to be doing that. Leslie, sorry.
It's just so expensive to audit. And the cost of media, what people are willing to pay, each media company is shrinking. So if you're getting less money, you're going to have less money. So I'm not sure I would invest in auditing companies. I think that they'll have to figure out how to do a lot more with less money and more often, more complex. Like that to me sounds like
I half agree with you. I mean, I'm talking specifically media auditing companies. I'm not talking the large, expensive companies.
I am talking about the media audit companies. I mean, you know, if it's $300 million to pay Nielsen for your rating service, $600 million to pay for a rating service, great. But those companies can no longer afford that. So when that $300 million turns into $100 million or $50 million, then how much can you spend on the audit? You know, Nielsen can afford to spend a fortune on audits, but not everybody can. And
yeah, but I think that is, the US is an outlier in that regard. Okay. In terms of, yeah, Lucia certainly is not spending nine figure sums on things, and
for sure, for sure.
John and Chris would love to be charging those sorts of amount, but I suspect they're not, and this may actually lead to, it'd be interesting to see whether things flow back in the other direction. If affordable auditing becomes available in the US, and I guess that's partly where the JIC came in the first place, right, was actually to, as you say, approve the usability of research as opposed to.
Well, because actually the MRC audit is not about usability.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a hole, and with these new currencies spewing out gazillion numbers, you can need somebody to look at whether they make sense. Do they hang together?
Now, I'm conscious of time. I've got one more question I need to ask you before I I let you go. I'm very, very glad you gave us your time this afternoon. I think Johnston's got one final thing before I ask my final question of all of you, John.
I'm sort of picking up on what Leslie was just talking about cost, and then another comment. Cost is not only about money, it's about the amount of time that the people in the organization spend in investing in it, and also the mental fight that goes on when people are told there's an audit coming. Certainly in the operating companies, they start it sends a shiver down their back half the time, and I think that's an argument against traditional audits, and an argument in favor of audits as promotion of best practice. I also think that aligned with that is I'm a great believer in certainly the larger companies doing their own internal audits as a process of best practice and as a way of mitigating the need for outside audits. I personally see the future of JIC's possibly as being, if you like, auditing, internal auditing, rather than doing everything from the ground up. So, but I think don't underestimate the cost of the audits in personal terms as well as in monetary ones.
Oh, well, in our next panel discussion, we're going to be looking more specifically at the skills issue that we've been touching on throughout the conversation. I think that the whole conversation today has been really informative in terms of setting up what the challenges are going to be by 2030 in terms of certainly trying to get more transparency on these complex systems and how we actually understand what's going on. But I know one of the points I made at last year's ASI was that I think one of the main conclusions I would have is that people are going to be even more reliant on experts and auditors than they were, because the chances of most data users being able to understand this are diminishing. I've used the parallel before that we don't really have any clue what happens inside an iPhone, but we are happy to use it so long as it does what it's supposed to do. It's the experts who need to know how the technology works. But that does have implications for particularly the existing research companies in terms of how they're structured. I this is perhaps a final wide question to end on, but do you think how do you think a successful research company will be structured next decade to best meet the needs of clients who may increasingly have their own data functions and dealing with a whole range of data sets? So I can see a couple of you are quite keen to answer that straight away. Brendan, what does the research company of the future look like? And I'm conscious we are overrunning, so this could, just in a few words, do you think?
Okay, it's a sentence. To me, is improved reporting on their side, transparency. So if the vendors were more transparent, more regular, more deeper reporting to their JICs and to their clients, quite frankly, the need for auditing becomes less, and it becomes about check auditing, checking that the reports are right. So greater transparency from vendors would do us out of jobs, but I think it's the absolute right thing for the industry.
Cheer.
I gave a lot of thought to this. So I think we will see that the successful suppliers will need to operate as hybrid consultancies or hybrid knowledge, combining tech infrastructure, data science, compliance, but I will say also deep local understanding, because it's also about localization. And we will see, I think, a split of different layers like data collection, data validation, audience modeling, client delivery. This can be in only one place, but I see also that this can be done by different players, yes, which should work modular and interoperable all together, because the clients will demand systems which should plug in their own data warehouse or in the clean rooms, so this should be more interoperable. But I will go also to the countries and to the local knowledge, which will remain crucial from my point of view. So no matter how advanced the modeling and whatever they will do, if they miss the cultural nuances and they will fail to represent the fragmented consumption in a local market, I think the supplier will lose the relevance. And I think the most important thing and the successful thing for the supplier will be to explain the complex simply. Because if we cannot maintain the trust through clarity, even the best methodologies will not survive. So I think this is the most important one.
Definitely. Valerie?
In terms of expertise, I agree with what has been said. I would add that they will need experts in AI, in privacy, and also cybersecurity, because that's also an increasingly important aspect as we use more and more large data sets coming from different places. But I think we'll still need researchers as well, because I still believe that we will need panels, first-party data, and a lot of modeling as well. And the other thing I wanted to say is that I think in the future there will be more and more partnerships because competitors can become partners, for some topics given the increased complexity. And that applies from my point of view to auditors as well. I mean, we've already partnered in some countries with 3M3A or RSMB, and I think that's the future for us as well.
Chris?
I agree with everything. I disagree with a single thing, and I'm not going to repeat it. But what I will say is, I think probably the thing that clients will want more than anything else is seamless integration. Everyone wants to move quickly. This is a world that is moving incredibly quickly. More data is becoming available. Things are becoming obsolete so quickly. And research companies that are able to respond quickly, to interpret data sets quickly, to use AI to, use them, analyze them as effectively and optimally as possible, it's going to be incredibly important. So the data science, the data handling side of what we do is inevitably going to become so much more important than ever before.
Leslie, from a US perspective.
So I completely agree with and I think all of those pieces, as Lucia said, is being able to explain it, be able to take those really complex things and share them, whether it's all the parts, so that your users actually understand what they're getting. But yeah, it is, and I would say that the raw data, understanding the quality of the raw data somewhere in there, you need it. It's like garbage in, garbage out, but the quality of the raw data. And when you think of privacy, oh, I can't look at 500 million, whatever, 50 million responses, but I can go to some and look deeply and compare where I have multiple data for one single household. Is it the same household? Are they matching? All of that. Really understanding the quality of the data is going to be an essential piece of this.
And finally, where we started, John, you kicked us off with the research company of the future.
I find myself agreeing with everybody that people said before. I think access to the data is very important, and I think simplifying it, of being aware of customer expectations, but being able to explain it in a way, explain it clearly. Those are the two pieces that are there. The skill sets are going to be myriad that are going to be needed, and yes, that might argue in favor of collaborations as and when needed for different services. So raw data important. Explanations of data important, and more collaboration, I think.
Well, I hope the research companies were taking notes, because that's some very wise advice there, which I'd also amplify as well. But it's been great to have you all on the discussion. I'm not going to sum up, because I think that actually it tees up so many great questions that hopefully we'll be picking up in the second of these panels that we'd be running in a month or two. And as we say, this is all very much building up to what we hope is going to be one of the main themes of the event in Copenhagen, which is going to be measurement in 2030. So in the meantime, thanks to all our panelists for what's been a really engaging hour, and take care, and we'll speak to you all soon.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank
Bye-bye.
you. Bye.
Thanks,
Thank
Richard.
you very much.
Bye. Bye.